Mingus said that Dolphy sounded like a kid on the flute compared to Buddy Collette. It's a very heavy statement. That says the kind of respect that Mingus had for Buddy Collette.
He's a very gentle, sweet soul, and yet he's a great master. He's like a sage who really has a big love and care for humanity and his fellow man.
He plays the saxophone, flute, and clarinet with equal grace. He composes jazz and classical music. Buddy Collette is an unsung hero in the world of music. A stroke at age 76 took Buddy off the musical stage, but prompted a new appreciation of this West Coast legend. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we're paying tribute to multi-instrumentalist Buddy Collette. Buddy has always been a big man, standing over 6 feet tall with broad, muscular shoulders. But his physical size doesn't seem to match his quiet personality. Trumpeter and band leader Gerald Wilson.
Big guy, you expect him to be forceful and everything and big, you know, but he's a gentle giant. He is really, truly a gentle giant.
Buddy Collette grew up and performed with all of L.A.'s jazz legends, including saxophonist Dexter Gordon and Eric Dolphy, and bassist Charles Mingus. Collette amazed his contemporaries with an ability to bring a special tone and swing to so many instruments. Musicians call it embouchure, the ability to make the lips produce sound from an instrument. The embouchure is different on the saxophone and clarinet. It's different still for the flute or piccolo. Buddy's ability to play all four is nothing short of amazing. Charles Lloyd is a saxophonist and a former student of Collette's.
He can double and play other instruments with incredible ease. Most people who play saxophone, they wouldn't be as proficient at the clarinet. The clarinet is more difficult because it's got a different kind of leap in the octave. Buddy mastered all of that.
In the 1950s and 60s, Buddy Collette became one of the few African Americans to play West Coast jazz, the mellow style of music popularized by such greats as Jerry Mulligan, Shelly Manne, Chet Baker, and Stan Getz. Buddy says musical style has little to do with race and everything to do with heritage and surroundings.
I didn't grow up in an area where they did that much, like even in New Orleans, you know. Where you grew up and they were all playing blues, clarinet or something. I grew up where there was studio work and classical, and I went to integrated schools, even in Watts. All of our friends were everybody, you know, but plenty of diversity. So, of course, you take on that.
As heard on this tune, West Coast artists Stan Getz and Chet Baker were blowing more sedate sounds than their East Coast counterparts. Buddy's magic was to add a new level of swing. By the 1950s, Collette's friends, Chico Hamilton, Charles Mingus, and Charles Lloyd, moved to New York, drawn by the musical excitement and job opportunities. Collette stayed in Los Angeles, a decision that would keep him out of the limelight for most of his career. Trumpeter Clora Bryant.
What Buddy was doing wasn't where he would be exposed to the general public. He was big out there in the studios. But how many people knew? When the record comes out, he could say, I played on this and I played for that person, and Frank Sinatra, whomever. But the lay people, they wouldn't know that. And Buddy's not the kind to go around talking about it.
Buddy was born William Marcel Collette on August 8, 1921, in the Watts District of Los Angeles. His father drove a garbage truck for the city, and his mother was a homemaker and part-time maid. Collette took a drive through his old neighborhood and recalls those early days.
Turn here in 96. This is where a bunch of us grew up. Most of the people built their own homes there. I had piano from 10 to 12. And then I started saxophone when I was 12, still going to junior high school. So I was becoming aware then, because we began to do rehearsals in the Los Angeles area, meeting people like Chico Hamilton and Jackie Kelson, Dexter Gordon, and all those guys from Jefferson High School. I went to Jordan High School in Watts.
Buddy's parents took him to see Louis Armstrong perform in Los Angeles. Buddy right then and there realized music offered an exciting alternative to the dead-end jobs then available to African Americans.
There's no life any better than that. The way the musicians looked, the way they were enjoying themselves, the way the people would enjoy it. So it just kind of hit me, you know. I saw people work on the roads, railroads and things, and my dad was a garbage truck driver. But there was no enjoyment in his face like these guys did. The musicians, seeing Louie and the guys, they looked like they had found gold or oil or something.
At the break of dawn, there's no sun, sunrise. When your lover has gone, when your lover has gone, when your lover has gone, what lonely hours. The evening shadows fall. What lonely hours with memory lingering.
Buddy Collette formed his first jazz band in 1933 at the age of 12. He got some old sheet music from a musician friend, but the charts required a bass player. So he convinced a rather socially awkward acquaintance from junior high to switch from cello to bass. His name was Charles Mingus.
I hired Charlie Mingus on the bass, but Charles used to play cello. When I first met him, I had heard about him. So I was looking for him. I figured, well, if the guy can play cello, and he'll trade his cello in. I asked him if he asked his dad to trade the cello in for a bass, and his dad did. So 2 weeks later, he found me. I didn't know, we weren't buddies then. But once he said, I got a bass, I'm ready to go to join the band.
Mingus showed signs of musical brilliance even back then, but he had an explosive personality. Many times during the ensuing years, Collette helped Mingus smooth out relations with producers and other musicians. When Mingus was dying of cancer in Mexico, he asked Buddy to visit him. James Newton is a flutist and former student of Collette's.
their roots coming up together meant a lot to all of them. They had a bond that remained for the rest of their days. Buddy is a real friend. He understands the importance and the commitment of friendship. We have a saying, if you had to go into war, who would you pick? Mingus would have picked Buddy Collette.
Buddy played with other young Los Angeles musicians who later became legends of jazz. He first met Dexter Gordon on a street corner in South Central Los Angeles.
He was huge, you know, a big guy. Looked like a little Abner type kid at that time. The big shoes on. He was so tall the pants didn't go all the way down to the bottom. And he was a lot of fun, you know. Had a lot of humor. He played alto then, not tenor. When I first met him, he was walking on the street and he'd be playing his horn. You know, always have his horn out, just carrying it around. And he'd stand on the corner and play and kick his feet up. It just was that kind of unusual personality. He didn't mind just playing a song and nursery rhymes. Murray had a little lamb and stuff in there. You know, he could figure out stuff like that that would work.
You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles. It's a portrait of multi-instrumentalist Buddy Collette. I'm Nancy Wilson.
Now go through here, 42nd Street here. This corner here was where the Downbeat Club was. Right there. Other side was the Last Word. And here we're coming up on the Dunbar right here.
Looking down Central Avenue in the heart of Los Angeles, Buddy Collette describes the clubs that used to line the street, which became the music and jazz center of Los Angeles in the 30s and 40s. It was a place where Collette, Charles Mingus, and saxophonist Jackie Kelson found mentors.
The avenue was exciting. You know, you could find a jam session the day or night, after hours, always. A guy named Snake White, who was a fine writer, he drank a lot, but he found Jackie Kelson and myself, who were probably about 16, 17 years old then. And he had us over his house every day. He'd write music in hard keys, A and D, and then have us to play it, and he'd sing the parts, you know. And we would work hard at that. Anybody, you know, his age would say, you must be crazy, we're not gonna try to play that. And we did learn a lot by doing that. We got to be some of the best players in town.
But before Buddy could seriously launch his professional career, World War II broke out, and he joined the armed forces. Playing in a Navy band, he improved his music skills and began thinking about using other instruments. When the war ended, Buddy returned to a changed Central Avenue. Where the sound of swing once filled the street, bebop was quickly taking its place. Collette picked up the new sounds. Trumpeter Gerald Wilson.
Buddy was one of the first beboppers in Los Angeles. He's one of the first, and he knows the idiom very well. He does it, knows how to play it, knows how to write it, knows how to compose it. He knows how to orchestrate for a trio. He knows how to orchestrate for a duo, a quartet, quintet, septet, on up to the big orchestra. He played with everybody here, all the West Coast guys. Buddy was the man.
Thank you. The 1949 tune, It's April, featuring Buddy Collette, recorded in the backroom studios at Dolphins of Hollywood. The store was nowhere near Hollywood, but it was a jumping place with a DJ spinning records live on the radio.
Well, we've never seen a store like that. I mean, he had everything going in there, all kinds of records, of course, and disc jockey announcing, you know, and playing records at that time, you know, probably during the day and the night, maybe until 3 or 4 in the morning.
John Dolphin, owner of the record studio, had the unfortunate habit of not paying his musicians. Years later, one disgruntled musician stabbed and killed Dolphin over just such a dispute. Buddy took a far more sanguine approach.
Dolphin was supposed to pay us, but every time he'd come there to him, he didn't have the fee, so I don't have it now, I'll have it next week. But that wasn't the main thing. The records are now playing on the radio and everything, and people saying, wow, we heard you. I mean, that was $1 million right there, publicity in our own neighborhood.
In 1950, African Americans were excluded from TV and film studio bands. Those studio gigs were among the best paying jobs in town. That year, Buddy Collette became the first African American to perform in a television studio band. The accomplished sight reader and multi-instrumentalist played on the Groucho Marx show, You Bet Your Life. Gerald Wilson.
If we were gonna pick a guy to get this job, to open that door as Jackie Robinson opened it for baseball, Buddy would have been a man. In the first place, he was a wonderful musician, played his instruments impeccably. Also, he's a well-schooled musician. He knows how to compose, he knows how to arrange, and he knows how to orchestrate. And I am one that can vouch for that because I actually have one of his big orchestrations that I played in my band for a number of years. So Buddy has all of that going for him, so he was the man to do it.
Buddy Collette demonstrates the kind of flute prowess he showed the TV studios on this version of Over the Rainbow from the CD Nice Day with Buddy Collette. Buddy wasn't satisfied to simply get a good job for himself. He dove into the battle against music industry segregation and the growing danger of McCarthyism. He helped organize a concert and rally protesting government repression of African-American singer, actor, and political activist Paul Robeson.
We had a string quartet with flute. I was playing the flute. And before we could do the concert, he walked in with about 10 bodyguards because, you know, people were trying to hurt him. As he walked in on the theater, we were there waiting for him, and there were all these little signs posted. There will be no public speaking today. And when he walked out, he didn't talk. He starts singing his speech. People just cheered because they knew he was a brilliant man. He could figure his way out a lot of things.
Set my hand upon the plow, my feet upon the sod. Turn my face towards east and praise be to God.
Buddy Collette then led a grassroots campaign to desegregate the Los Angeles Musicians Union, which had a black local and a white local. Eventually, big-name musicians supported the effort, including Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, and Benny Carter. Gerald Wilson was an early and active supporter of amalgamation.
Buddy and another dear friend of ours at that time, Red Callender, they talked to me about the movement that they had started. They told me about it. I immediately joined the group. Buddy and Red and myself, we would go around to different places getting signatures from many musicians, white musicians, and black musicians, of course. Buddy was playing with my band some during that period. And it was my band was a big force in it because I had at that time was doing a special show, and I had about 23 or 4 musicians in my band. So right away we had a whole band full of votes right there.
Performed by the Gerald Wilson Orchestra from the CD Central Avenue Sounds. The two union locals finally did merge, laying open the possibility for black musicians to get higher paying jobs. Still ahead, Buddy Collette helps define the West Coast jazz sound. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio. Saxophone, flute, and clarinet player Buddy Collette emerged in the 1940s as one of the best musicians along Central Avenue in Los Angeles. He became the first African-American to join a TV studio band and led efforts to desegregate the Musicians Union. By the mid-1950s, Buddy was helping define what was soon to be known as West Coast jazz. Musicians in California were developing a more mellow and cerebral style of playing, in stark contrast to the hard-edged bop coming out of New York. Epitomizing that sedate West Coast sound is the Stan Getz Chet Baker performance of Conception from the album Quintessence. In 1955, Buddy Collette became a founding member of a seminal West Coast jazz group, the Chico Hamilton Quintet. This was an unusual sounding group, unusual because of its instrumentation: piano, reeds, guitar, bass, drums, and cello. Buddy says Fred Katz was the first to establish cello as a legitimate jazz instrument.
Fred would be playing the cello out in front. He'd stay out there too long, so the band would get back on the stand, which was very small. And then Fred couldn't get back to the piano, so then he'd play his lines on cello. And that's the first time we begin to hear that, well, the cello will work here. He doesn't just have to play piano.
The feeling is just as contemporary today as it was then.
Drummer and band leader Chico Hamilton.
Back then, it was very, very different. You didn't hear that sound or that kind of feeling in jazz back in the early 50s like that, for the simple reason that there was no one else that had the instrumentation.
It's You, featuring Buddy Collette on saxophone and Chico Hamilton on drums. Buddy also contributed to the West Coast jazz style when he started playing flute, another instrument not traditionally used in jazz.
Flute is a softer instrument. Anybody that plays flute is from the softer sound. That's why I think some of the stuff that we did then got pushed aside, because it wasn't supposed to be like the East Coast. We were living a whole different, in the sunshine and the beach and stuff. We were reflecting what was going on in California.
In 1956, Buddy went into the studio to record his first album as a group leader. Man of Many Parts became a popular LP because Collette brought a new kind of swing to the West Coast sound, as evidenced in his original composition, Cycle. Buddy says that at age 35, he had gained the necessary experience to lead a group.
I was like a pro starting out. In fact, Ralph Gleason from San Francisco area wrote Buddy Collette album is all one could want, something like that was the title. So he went into things like, I had joined the Giants, the Benny Carters and the Teddy Wilson, which didn't have to be true, but the way this came in, it was like I wasn't just beginning. And they played my record a lot. You'd have about 10 or 12 selections on it. And they were playing, some DJs would play the whole one side.
The flute tone is really beautiful.
Flutist James Newton praises Collette's technique when playing Ruby from Man of Many Parts.
There's a chamber music quality about it also. The way that the melody is being played is so soulful. It's like he's telling you a story from the bottom of his heart. That's because the tone is dark to me, and that's something I've always loved about him. Beautiful.
Man of Many Parts allowed Buddy to expand his range as a composer. One ballad on the album was named after his daughter, Cheryl Ann.
The sound that makes you kind of dreamy like.
Trumpeter Clora Bryant.
He doesn't have to play a lot of notes for you to hear what he's saying or feel what he's saying. He reminds me a little bit of Wardell Gray on this. Yeah. He's been playing this stuff more. He was in the studio too much. See, this is beautiful.
Buddy followed Man of Many Parts with several other successful albums. His career, along with those of his Los Angeles friends Charles Mingus, Chico Hamilton, and Eric Dolphy, was ready to take off nationally. His friends moved to the Big Apple. Despite their pleas for Buddy to join them, Collette stayed home in Los Angeles. He had regular work in the TV studios, and he wanted economic security for his family. Clora Bryant.
He didn't have a big mouth about himself. My idea is if you're going to do anything and get out there where people really know you, you can't be laid back. You have to talk about what you can do. But Buddy, that's not his persona at all. That's why if he had gone to New York, I think he could have developed that.
I'm still urging Buddy to come back to New York.
Chico Hamilton says California produces a different musical vibe.
Everybody's so laid back there, man. You know how you guys are. What happens in a recording session out there? Instead of talking about the music and things like that, these guys talking about they got to get somebody to clean their pool or somebody to cut their lawns and things like that. You know, everybody's so cool, laid back. Music, nothing happens, man. It's my home, man. I love L.A., but New York is the place.
Hamilton says Collette's career would have taken a different turn if he'd gone to New York.
But it would have taken a giant step. Because the world would have been able to realize, hey, he's to be reckoned with, that he's got a sound, he's got something to say. Buddy would probably have been just as popular as Mingus or myself.
Thank you. You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a portrait of Buddy Collette. I'm Nancy Wilson. That's a 1956 recording of Buddy Collette performing St. Andrew's Place Blues from Man of Many Parts. It's an original composition by Collette named after the location of his Los Angeles apartment, which became a center for jam sessions and teaching. By the 1960s, Collette had established a solid reputation as a jazz educator and mentor. His students included flutist James Newton and saxophonist Frank Morgan, Sonny Criss, Eric Dolphy, and Charles Lloyd. Lloyd says, in some ways, Buddy sacrificed his own career to help others.
There's an allegory where a man goes up to a wall and he looks over the wall and he smiles and laughs and jumps over. Several men do that because they make their escape into paradise. You know, they leave this veil of tears. Buddy Collette is one who went up and saw over the wall, but he came back to save suffering humanity. He's responsible for Charlie Mingus, for Eric Dolphy, for myself, and countless other musicians. And he's like a great sage who sacrificed his own launch to prepare others.
Buddy Collette continued working with his own group right into the mid-1990s. He wrote and performed a number of original tunes for a special 1996 benefit concert in the Los Angeles suburb of Thousand Oaks, including the ensemble piece, Andre. As Buddy matured, so did his sound.
Tone on the alto is now broader.
James Newton.
That lyricism continues to always come out. It's more full-bodied than in the 50s. It's like a Chateau Mouton Rothschild that has just aged, and you take it out and you decant it. You smell the aroma. You swirl it in your mouth, and there are no words you can say.
Richard Simon has been Buddy Collette's bass player for 15 years. He admires how Buddy's playing evolved.
The earlier Buddy Collette flute playing strikes me as being elegant and maybe some would say careful, although he certainly took chances then. I just like the sort of burnished tone. I like the way that the Buddy of the 90s is confident to the point where he knows that the feeling that he's going for might be more important than individual notes, and yet he manages to play phrases that are models of composition and elegance and clarity.
Chico Hamilton agrees that over the years, Buddy's playing has mellowed.
Well, we grow. I guess when he was a young Buddy Collette, he'd talk, well, how you doing? Now as a sort of senior Buddy Collette, he says, how you doing? So why wouldn't the sound be different?
But Buddy Collette could still capture that old bebop spirit when needed. In this 1995 tune called Bop Suey, Collette plays off the melody laid down by saxophonist Gabe Baltazar.
Bop Suey is an ingenious composition. What it does is it incorporates a number of bebop melody lines or licks that were brought into the consciousness of jazz musicians and listeners, primarily by Charlie Parker.
Bassist Richard Simon.
Buddy took on the daunting task of trading licks during the melody choruses with Gabe Baltazar, and this is something only a studio musician of the caliber of Buddy Collette could have pulled off, because as I recall, we did this in one take, so he was reading little pastiches of bebop licks without having seen them before.
In 1996, the Library of Congress commissioned Buddy to write and perform a special big band concert. It was a highlight of Buddy's long and prolific career. For that concert, he brought together some of his old players from Los Angeles to perform at Washington, D.C.'s Lincoln Theater. The band included, among others, Jackie Kelson, Britt Woodman, Ann King, Gerald Wiggins, Fred Katz, Al Viola, and Chico Hamilton, sitting in on this rendition of Collette's Buddy Boo. Buddy Boo, from the recording Buddy Collette Big Band in Concert. Bassist Richard Simon says Buddy infused his compositions and performances with his own special personality.
Buddy was the consummate gentleman often on the bandstand, and once he arrived for the job, he was a model of that same dignity and class. He always dressed impeccably, not in an ostentatious way, but always relaxed, subdued colors, not to bring attention to himself, but always stylish, nice lines, nice earth tones. And the Buddy that played the horn was very much the Buddy that you would meet.
After years of toiling in the jazz vineyards, Buddy Collette is finally gaining greater recognition. He's been honored by the mayor of Los Angeles and by the National Association of Recording Arts and Sciences. Collette's autobiography is scheduled for publication in the spring of 2000. In 1998, Buddy suffered a stroke, which initially left him partially paralyzed. Richard Simon says, ironically, that's when the awards and honors seemed to flood in.
The world just saw him as eternally youthful, and there was no need to treat him as an elder statesman as long as he was actively playing. It was only when the illness forced him to sit back and take a breather that suddenly people realized, well, look at all this man has done. It's high time that we honor him, and certainly before it's too late, which is too often the case.
That's Buddy Collette playing saxophone on Duke Ellington's tune, Ville's Ville is the Place Man. from the 1996 recording, Jazz for Thousand Oaks. Buddy Collette is recovering from his stroke and plans to continue composing music. Buddy Collette is finally getting recognition for his accomplishments as a multi-instrumentalist, composer, and fighter for justice. Despite this lifetime of achievement, Buddy remains modest about his accomplishments.
Maybe my name is not as big as it could have been, but I don't need a real big name. My name is big enough. Like if I can be friends to people like Ellington and Robeson, that's my goal, to be a part of making the world a better place, not having a bigger name and making more money.
Our tribute to Buddy Collette was produced and written by Reese Ehrlich. Post-production engineer was Rima Snyder of Red Wagon Audio in San Francisco. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens, assistant producer Madeline Smith. The senior editor is Greg Fitzgerald. The administrative assistant, Linda Broen. Website coordinator, John Murph. To email us or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, seeking to enrich community life through support of education, arts, and culture. Additional support has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.